Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast, the final podcast of this Autumn Nations series window. Ireland have their fourth and final game of the block this Saturday against Australia at the Aviva Stadium. That after a 52-17 win against Fiji last weekend. Bernard Jackman and Johnny Murphy are with me to look back and look forward. And Bernard, I suppose, to start with, just in broad terms, Ireland's win against Fiji. A much more ruthless performance than we have seen in the previous couple of games. Granted, the opposition were quite poor on the day.
Yeah, Fiji were surprisingly poor, but I think Ireland had a much better shape to them. They looked like an Andy Farrell coach team, and we've kind of seen that the longer players tend to spend in camp with Andy, the more that's, I suppose you could say that's how Ireland play, and that's what was very frustrating against Argentina after the first 25 minutes. We didn't really see that, and likewise against the All Blacks. So, it was pretty ruthless, and yeah, we could have scored even more tries. You know, 3-4 passes that probably would have led to tries. But a very good set piece, and a lot of really good play off our set piece, which I think could please the coaches and puts in a good position now for what's a really exciting last game. And obviously, it's outside the window, but I'm glad we've got four games this November.
Yeah, the attack, particularly the attack off the set piece, Johnny, was quite inventive and interesting as well, because there was a nice variation to the tries, where that first one, it was the same line-out move they went back to from last week, from the previous week against Argentina, where on that night you had Ronan Kelleher sweeping around and popping and going himself. This time around you had Gus McCarthy sweeping around the outside and popping back into Caelan Dorris. So that's obviously one they quite like at the moment. You had a nice little quirky little 5 meter tap and go move where Gus McCarthy, who we'll get onto a little bit later as well, McCarthy, Van der Fleer and Caelan Dorris were all involved for Van der Fleer to score. You had a maul try in there. There was just a few nice little moves and a few nice little tricks and some nice little starter plays where they were kind of working through the playbook fairly well.
Yeah, and it's great to see that kind of innovation, but also, you know, they have a new attack coach. So, you know, you're going to see little kind of add-ons and layering across a lot of their attack. The more that, you know, Andrew is allowed to kind of move forward with them. And then, you know, multiple options then, you know, in terms of Australia, then if they run that same line out again, they've, you know, one, two, three different options off that. So it makes it a lot harder to defend. You know, I suppose they had a bit more time and which allowed them to execute those plays, but it's nice to get that confidence to build into that and push forward with they haven't, you know, Andrew hasn't completely changed the attack shape or anything like that, but there has been probably some add-ons in different areas, and obviously first phase attack now is something that he can put his own stamp on. So it's nice to see those you know, to see that layering in attack and those multiple options, which, as I said already, makes them a very hard team to defend when they do get that clean ball. Line out's so important. You know, we've said that quite a lot. Bert says it all the time. You know, the line out launches and how that allows Ireland get into get into their phase attack and kind of get into their flow is massive to them. So it's good to see that firing again.
And part of that then, Bernard, as well, is like the maul looked a little bit better than it has in the last while. They scored a try directly from a maul. First time since round three of the Six Nations that had happened. They'd gone six games in a row without scoring one from it. But like, it might sound like a small little thing, but the stronger your maul is, the more respect an opposition have to give to it. And that obviously opens up the corridors elsewhere if you want to go off the top. So if you have a strong maul, it gives you options all around the pitch, not just in that area.
Absolutely. And I'm fascinated to see. I haven't seen confirmed yet. Has Skelton gone back to La Rochelle, or is he allowed to stay?
As far as I know, he's gone back.
Yeah, he's gone back. Yeah, so that's a massive blow to the Wallabies' maul defence. And I think if you look back to the Wales-Australia game and the Wales-Australia games in the summer, Wales did serious damage to Australia with the maul as an attacking weapon. And they couldn't get any purchase out of it against Wales in the Principality a couple of weeks ago. And Joe Smith was asked about it. He said, well, you know, you must have done a lot of work on your maul. And he said, well, yeah, we put Will Skelton in, you know. And effectively, it can often be as simple as that. Someone of his ability to destroy opposition mauls. And look, Leinster have seen that. So that's a big boost to Ireland that he's out. And I think also, you know, I spoke to some players and they worked a lot on it in Portugal in the pre-November camp. Worked hard at it. We didn't really see. We tried it against the All Blacks, but we couldn't get any go forward there. Tried a little bit against Argentina, but used more breakout plays. But just getting that confidence from getting it going forward, even if it's only if it's against Fiji, who aren't the best to defend it, I think would be huge. And it'll be an area where they'll want to really go after Australia because they're better defending the breakout plays than Fiji were. And you need to have a little bit more balance to your game. So if you can actually, you know, get them to concentrate on and worry about your maul attack, it actually will open up space in the seam or down the blind side, like we saw for Kelleher a little bit later on.
Yeah, certainly will. In the past, like obviously we mentioned Johnny, Fiji weren't up to scratch, but like it was important that Ireland were fairly ruthless at the weekend and put a score up and got into for some good tries because in the past, Andy Farrell has made rafts of changes to teams week on week, you know, for a game against a so-called weaker opposition, and the performance hasn't really been there. And you only have to go back to the Fiji game 2 years ago. I think they won 35-17 or thereabouts. And after the match, I remember being there at the time. Andy Farrell was not happy at all. He had a fair cut off his team in the press conference after the game. And you look back at the match day 23 that was out there. There are players in that group who have either haven't been given a chance since or have barely been given a chance since. But he was quite pleased on Saturday with what he saw, particularly from the players who had either come in for debuts or for starts, who we'll get to in a minute, but also someone like Craig Casey, for example, who came in and, you know, kept that tempo up that Gibson Park had. Bundiaki, who came back in and played like a man who was very, very unhappy he'd been left out the week previous against Argentina. Or Jacob Stockdale, who, while he obviously left the game with a hamstring injury, which is an awful blow for him, he was having a cracking 50 minutes up to that point. Almost every player that came in and was given a chance, like, more or less took their opportunity.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you make a lot of changes, it can create a bit of a clunky display in terms of partnerships and you know, pairings. But you know, you look at the back line and the amount of changes that they made, they look very sharp. And even with the changes that went on, you know, and the injuries that forced, you know, Murray on the wing and different things, they still, you know, they still got through their shape. They still played well. Only for probably something that they're going to be disappointed with is probably their passing in those wider channels for those a couple of forward passes. But they still got through their shape and attacked really well, regardless of who was where, you know, position-wise, wherever they were. So that's you know, I think that's probably a credit to, you know, to the amount of time in camp that they're spending, you know, within that also the knowledge and the clarity that the players have, which kind of gives them that opportunity to play. But it was really, I felt it was seamless for the most part. There's obviously, you know, a few work-ons that they're going to try and get right. But yeah, it was great to see. And I think, you know, a big thing was, you know, everyone was questioning whether they would give Casey a go, that you name checked him, you know, his pace at the breakdown, the quality of that breakdown, you know, allows Ireland very much gets into that flow around the corner and into their attack shape that creates those spaces in the 15-meter channel when they're kind of coming back to width. So yeah, all in all, it was you know, that we didn't think last week talking he was going to make that amount of changes, and it was great to see it pay off and gives them a lot of security going forward, whatever about the Six Nations, but into you know, a Lions summer where they're going to be missing a lot of their frontliners.
Yeah, and Bernard, as Johnny pointed out, it wasn't just changes from last week. There were changes in the game as well that they had to react to losing Jamie Osborne fairly early on. Kieran Frawley comes on and has a really good performance as well, which I'd say he was delighted with off the back of the New Zealand game. As Johnny said, you've Conor Murray playing 30 minutes on the wing. Gus McCarthy playing I know it was only the final 5 minutes, but playing the final 5 minutes in the back row and Caelan Darris out in the centre. There was plenty of disruption that they had to deal with during the game.
Yeah, and it shows you how physical it was. And in fairness to the Fijians, part of their downfall was their desire to make massive hits, and that led to a lot of line breaks and a lot of poor discipline from Fiji, which Ireland obviously used to have more line-out opportunities and more launch and hurt them. So from a Fijian point of view, they made it so easy for Ireland. But yeah, how Ireland looked, even at the end, they were still in the Fijian half pressing and didn't look out of shape. It was funny, Murray pushing Casey out of the way to get a pass in a wide ruck at one stage. But yeah, look, it's all good, and all these things can happen. It can happen against Australia this weekend. You can have to dig
Well,
deep.
sorry to interrupt. It did happen against Australia 2 years ago. Johnny Sexton pulls out the warm up and
That's
Jack
right.
Crowley comes in to start.
And Ross Barron kicks
Yeah.
an important goal later on, which kind of got him back on track for the Rugby World Cup. So, yeah, that's the reality of it. Like, this will be the last opportunity for players to, I suppose, leave a memory or give an opinion to Simon and Farrell, etc. For the Six Nations, and for some of the players, the Lions tour, he won't be directly involved for the Six Nations, so they'll want to go out in the high. And I think this Australian team, I know their bubble got burst a little bit by the defeat to Scotland, but they're definitely on the right track and they're dangerous. And some of the stuff they put together against Scotland was quite decent. I think they obviously Sulihi going off early, took a little bit from their attack. They didn't get the scrum dominance that they might have deserved, to be fair. I think the scrum was good. It's much improved. And I think this is a proper test for us, because their breakdown work is good. They're nice and athletic. They're very good in the air, which didn't become a key factor against Fiji, but it wasn't great for us against Argentina or the All Blacks. So there's plenty of things to ponder on, and makes this game fascinating in different ways.
On some of the younger players then, Johnny, obviously you on the pod last week, you were tipping Sam Prendergast to come in and get the start, and he did. And 10, 15 minutes in, I'd say poor Sam was sitting on the sideline wondering, was he going to get a chance to get back out there? And his yellow card was stayed a yellow card after the bunker review, and I'd say he was a relieved man. And there probably was, it probably did affect him for a few minutes afterwards because he had two kicks that went out on the full. But how impressed were you with the way that he actually, it wasn't a seamless first start for him, that he actually had, he had that wobble in the first quarter of the match, and in fairness, pulled it out of the bag afterwards and like was really, really impressive.
Yeah, I think look on the yellow card. I personally watching it at the time, I thought it was going to be upgraded and what they were talking. So I was a bit more, I suppose, gutted for him in that sense. But then, thankfully, it stayed as a yellow. I suppose knowing Sam, the big thing that I knew, regardless of the mistakes, was that he has an incredible, mental capacity just to park mistakes and move on. That spiral that goes out on the thing, they get a bit lost in attack shape, and that happened a couple of times in the first half, which I'd say he probably won't be necessarily too happy with. And that's obviously one of their main work-ons. It's actually quite a nice spiral. It's just 3 or 4 yards too much. And then kicking the ball dead off the penalty. But he always had the ability to bounce back after mistakes. I never really doubted that that wasn't going to be the case. I think, you saw his ability taking the ball to the line and creating space for other players very much so. And I think, as Bert already said, the want from the Fijian players to make those tackles on that line, allow them get at those seams that were being left by those guys kind of shooting out or targeting players. And they exploited it very well. But yeah, no, I never had any doubt in terms of his mental fortitude after a couple of mistakes to come in. When Birch and I had him in school, he threw an intercept in semi-final of the cup in the first 60 seconds, and we came back and won the game, and he was probably man of the match. So, and he was only a 17-year-old, a fifth year. So it's a big, there was never any doubt that his mental capacity to shift and move on from mistakes is certainly there.
Farrell was very impressed with him after the game as well, Bernard.
Yeah, and I think he is very impressive. Johnny knows him much better than I do, but he is very impressive as a leader, for his composure, for his ability to take on information and then disperse that to the players. I was there quite early, and maybe an hour and a half before the game, and the backs were just out on the pitch. Obviously, just went out for a little walk, and he got him into a huddle, and you could just see him just reconfirming what the plan was. And that's a ten's job. It's not rocket science, but I know from my experience of him, when he does talk like that in front of a group, it's with clarity and composure, and you believe him. You believe him, and he knows his role within it, and that's and he has the skill set to do it as well, as Jack does, or Frawley does. But I suppose the reason we're talking about Sam even more is because he's young. He's 21. He hasn't had a huge amount of time in a Leinster shirt, in massive games, but yet he looked very composed and capable in a well, it was a big test match. It was one sided test match in the end, but it was a big test match, and Ireland had to go and put Fiji away. And he had lots of moments within that, which led to that, and positive moments, and he had some tough moments as well. So yeah, it's fascinating. I'm fascinated to see selection this week. I personally would go with Jack, but I got a sense from the way Andy was talking, that maybe there's momentum with Sam, but or maybe you pull a rabbit out of the hat and Frawley gets a chance. You know what I mean? Which I think pre-competition, pre-November, we would have said Frawley deserves to start at 10. But now he seems to be the forgotten man completely, despite really only having, a period against the All Blacks, which is very poor. But like, that's we're not going to write someone off because of that, are we? And then a good
Linked up
impact off.
quite well with Prendergast and
No,
Hanfield
100%. I am.
on Saturday as well.
Yeah, I do think that's
And
Ireland.
caught one hell of a rib tickler as well during the first half.
No. Well, first, that's the he. That's why he's good. That's why he's good, because he does take the ball to the line, and put himself in harm's way. So, yeah, like definitely, I think Ireland benefit from having two playmakers, and I said that earlier on. It's just how we get there is the challenge. Is the challenge, and maybe that's why Frawley could be number, 22 for a long time as well, because obviously he covers fullback, covers centre, he covers 10. But I wouldn't be against if he got the start this week. I wouldn't have any issue with it either. I think he's a very talented player, and the whole thing, like, think Ireland's one thing, but next week for the Champions Cup with Leo and Leinster, who plays 10? I mean, Ross obviously will probably play Friday night up in Belfast. Does he then? Is he the man in possession? It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. My money would be on Jack Crowley to start this weekend, more so just because breaking the fourth wall, he was up for media duty yesterday.
Yeah,
So generally a sign that you're going to be in the team. Sam was up last week as well. One of the other bits then, on speaking of the not quite a debut for Sam Prendergast for a start, but of the debutants, Cormac Isichuku and Gus McCarthy. Johnny, I don't know who exactly was picking player of the match last week. I cannot believe Gus McCarthy didn't get it. I know Bundiaki was brilliant, but a 21-year-old on debut scores a try, three direct assists, and had a hand in another try as well. The one off the 5 meter penalty where he pulls back that lovely pass. I mean, talk about a dream debut and a dream season for a young lad.
Yeah, and I think that, he was playing senior cup rugby 2 years ago. So for a front row to be able to do that within that time frame, is incredible. And I think it probably shows, what the purpose of, the Emerging Ireland tours are, but also the position that those development players, when they name a squad, and those three or four development players when they come in. And they back them. If they impress, and this was something that Andy said last week, if they impress and they go really well, then they've no problem throwing them in. And I think that's casting the net wide. It's giving guys opportunity now. Potentially with the hooker situation, their hands might have been forced a small bit given the amount of injuries but injuries create opportunities for other people, and guys, because of injury, can make careers for themselves. But you have to take the opportunities that are given to you. And Gus McCarthy is one of those guys that has grabbed every single opportunity that he has been given, because of those opportunities. And what a, not only what a week, but what a 3 months it's been for him in the lead up to it. And yeah, I was incredibly impressed. And again, a couple of shaky lineouts early doors that creates, a bit of extra nerves for him to deal with that, come back even stronger, finish in the back row. Like, fair play to him. It was a really, really good performance, and adds a bit of depth. Okay, again, Fiji, so there is that kind of stuff, but it does give us, in positions that potentially you're worried about, maybe 12, 18 months ago, we're worried about 15 with Hugo Keenan. Those opportunities for guys, when they get them, when they take them, it creates an extra name on the depth chart at that international level, which is really good.
The elephant in the room, though, Bernard, is that when Dan Sheehan is fit and when Lee Barron is fit and when John McKee is fit, that's, and throwing Ronan Keller as well, that's five hookers at Leinster. And people are going to be wondering, well, obviously Gus McCarthy would have come into this season, realistically, was probably the fifth choice at Leinster. Some people are saying, he should be moving to Munster, he should be moving to a different province or something like that. Not even specifically about Gus McCarthy, but it does highlight the backlog that's existing at Leinster. And ultimately, as well, how it's a great example of how there could potentially be other excellent players out there who haven't got the opportunities because, as Johnny says, other players ahead of them haven't got injured.
Yeah, and we have to hope there is. We have to hope there's more Gus McCarthys. We have to hope there's more Sam Prendergast. Just to talk, we hope there's more Cormac Isichuku, because his pathway has been interesting as well. Someone in Ulster took a punt on him through the Sevens program, and it's great. And like, he's a player with so much potential, and I think it's great to see that. Isichuku, realistically, it's only really the back end of last season where Richie gave him a run of games, where we all kind of said, "Wow, this fella has a ceiling that's higher." We always knew he had talent. I mean, he's been spoken about for the last 4 or 5 years in Irish rugby circles as, wait to see this fella. Is he arrived? But it's just taken a little bit of while. So realistically, when you think Farrell has kind of fast tracked him, and probably ahead of Keane Prendergast, who had been waiting for that chance. Cormac jumped across him. Sam has been fast tracked. Gus has been fast tracked into the test team. Obviously, Jack Boyle Clarkson has been fast tracked. To certainly said, okay, injuries played their way in that, but that's often the case for a lot of players to get their chance. So I think we can actually feel a lot better about ourselves, that some of the opportunities that have been given have been taken, and we will leave November with a bit more depth in certain positions than we started. Probably the one that we were most concerned about was prop. And okay, Tom Clarkson has done quite well in limited game time. We're probably not going to leave November in brilliant shape. The Tom O'Toole to Loosehead thing is still an experiment, so that's probably the still area of concern. But hooker wise, yeah, God, we're in a great place. I mean, feel for Dave Heffernan in a bit. Obviously came into camp and has been sent and gone back to Connacht without getting any game time, but that's elite sport. And Gus took his chance, and is now going to be someone that Leo will have even more confidence to play. But Lee Barron and McKee, they're quite good as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, they're quite good as well. So Gus will really have to battle it out. And I think in a hooker position, that's fine. I don't necessarily believe a 10 you need to be battling for your position every week, but at hooker or in some of the other positions, yeah, it's no harm. So it's actually a really good thing.
Does he win a second cap this weekend, or does Rob Herring come in
Ah,
for the, because it's a much bigger game? Do you want that bit of experience off the bench? How are you leaning there?
yeah, I'd be going for Rob Herring, off the bench. I think Rob is a very tidy, accomplished player, vast experience, very good set piece hooker. And I think the set piece will be key. Gus is good thrower, but this will be another level up. And yeah, I would stick with Herring this weekend. I think it's a big game for Ireland. It's obviously the 150th anniversary. It's a chance to finish off on a high, really build confidence for the Six Nations. So yeah, I think anyone who plays this weekend, it's because Farrell believes they can help us win rather than a little bit of experimentation.
Someone else then as well, who we've spoken about a couple of times. I think for the most part, Johnny, we thought he was going to be breaking the Caps record last week against Fiji, but he was given the week off. I think we're all kind of assuming Cian Healy's going to have some involvement in this weekend's game. It'll be a 134th Irish cap for him, to officially move him out beyond Brian O'Driscoll's record, which he equaled against Argentina. Like, I think we've spoken loads in the last year or so when he's broken records, Bernard, as well, around, like, you know, what he did when he was a young player and such an excellent player. But I mean, like, Johnny, when you look back over his career, to play 134 times in Test rugby, just, it comes across as just a remarkable achievement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible for a front row, said it before, for a front row to have that longevity to be able to do it for, nearly 20 years at the top level is incredible. And he's been there for so many big days. I said before we were on a Churchill Cup together in 2007, 2008, and he came off that, there was a lot of guys that came off that under 21s, under 20s World Cup winning side. Like he was on Earlsey's team, Ian Keatley, Darren Cave, all those guys that, are no longer playing now. And it's incredible that, and it just shows kind of particularly for him to come back after the injury pre-World Cup. I think, and I said this before, is the biggest testament to his professionalism and how he goes about his job on a daily basis. So yeah, it's incredible, and I suppose it's a really nice moment. It will be a really nice moment for him and his family doing it on the 150th anniversary. It's a special day, so maybe Farrell had that kind of planned in the back of his mind throughout the whole thing. So yeah, just absolutely insane and incredible. Fair play. Like he was obviously on the pitch, when they won in 2009. Fortunately, Birch was there. I was on the losing side, but yeah, like it's incredible. It's incredible.
And obviously, as Johnny said, like, it's the 150th anniversary game for the RFU this weekend. But the fact that it's against Australia as well, Bernard, it would be a lovely bit of symmetry given the fact that he made his debut against Australia 15 years ago.
Yeah, and I thought last week that Farrell might let him be captain of the team against Fiji and have it. But I think he held him back because of the symmetry of it. And I think that Farrell is very focused on kind of rituals and special mementos, special occasions, and marking those properly. So I think that's why he probably didn't get it last week, because he wants to get it this week. And yeah, for a huge week for him and the squad. He's very popular. He's highly respected by opposition. He doesn't sledge or. He just does his job. So there's never been any beef with Cian Healy, either with his own teammates or opposition teammates. And that's hard when you're playing a position as confrontational as prop, and you play against the same opponents for so many times. But it's testament to the kind of person he is as well. So huge week for him, we'd imagine, all going well. And I'm sure the players will want to mark it for him with a win.
Quickly on a couple of other selections then this week. Would you be expecting to go back to the second slash back row we've seen in previous weeks with Ryan and Joe McCarthy in the second row and Tadhg Byrne at six?
Yeah, obviously Baird is out, so
Yeah.
I prefer Byrne as a lock, to be honest. I actually wouldn't be against Isichuku getting another run there. But obviously that then you would
Would
have to
that
have him.
be your heart selection over your head?
No. Yeah, that's my heart. Yeah. No,
Yeah.
just to really see him, and the physicality and an out and out back rower. I think Tadhg is a class, world class second row. But I think the head wise, I think he will go back to that. Yeah, he'll go back to McCarthy, Ryan, Byrne, Conan, Byrne, Van der Fleer, and Doris. But obviously, with Conan's injury, we're a little bit limited in terms of other options. Peter on the bench, probably. And yeah, it's I'd say that's how we go. But I wouldn't be against Isichuku getting another just having a look at him, even though I said it should be a team to win. I think he can help us win as well.
Johnny,
But just, he
go ahead.
gives a bit of a a bit of X factor in that sixth position in terms of his, in those wider channels. He's of the same mold as Baird, and it was probably something they were missing against New Zealand when, the game fell in the melting pot after, 10, 15 minutes after half time. And, I think six having that, not that Tadhg is not, dynamic in the wider channels. I just think he has a skill set with his background that is very similar to Baird's, and he just gives you pace and power in those wider channels that, and finishing ability, for a big guy, just I'd love to see him at six and give it a go. Don't think it'll happen, but I would love to see it.
The really difficult question then is, what are the two starting centres this weekend? Because you could pick any two of Bundyaki, Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henshaw, Stuart McCluskey, and even throw Kieran Frawley into that mix as well. And I think you've got a pretty decent midfield.
Yeah, I think yeah, it's really tight there. Really tight. Does he revert back to Aki in the sense that he was his first choice during the World Cup, and that but then that create the this pairing has a lot of impact in the bench then as well. So it, if Crowley, as you say, is doing media, so likelihood he's gonna start. Then, if Robbie is on the bench, you're probably more than likely going to have Frawley on the bench because of his cover within the backfield at 15. Or then, if it's Sam's on the bench, then Crowley's going to be covering 15, which, is a bit more changes. So it's a big decision, and has a does Aki only start? Sorry, does if yeah, if he only starts, is he going to be on the bench? Maybe not, because at least Robbie could potentially, in a worst case, cover 15. So it's really, really tight. And I think their decision on the bench is probably going to have an impact on that because of what they would need to look at of in terms of their combinations last 15, 20, 25 minutes. So that's the call. That's the last jig. That's the last piece that will actually fill in. It's the piece that's going to fill in all around. So it's really, really tight. If you wanted to look at potentially what they ended with Frawley adding kind of something from the backfield, then you probably might have Henshaw as he to start as he has moved. But it's an intriguing selection. But I think they might fall on Aki as he potentially was their first choice coming into it, and with a performance after last week, maybe. But it's very, very, very tight. And whichever way they go, you'll completely understand.
Birch, what way are you leaning?
I'd go Robbie and Bundy. Yeah, I'd go Robbie and Bundy with Gary and Frawley on the bench. Yeah, with Casey on the bench as well. That'd be my three back subs.
Yeah, I think Casey probably has played himself onto the
I thought
bench this
he
week.
was really good. I thought he was class. Yeah, he's another one who could have been man of the match, to be fair. So I would go with Casey, yeah.
And that actually was quite pleasing for him as well, given how that game in South Africa went, where he was having an excellent match up until the second half, and obviously got that concussion which ruled him out of the second half or of the second test. On Australia then, obviously so much, Bernard, of this week and the discussion this week has been around Joe Schmidt coming back to Ireland. And I know Ireland played him at the World Cup last year when he was with New Zealand, and the year previous on the tour, but this is his first time bringing a team back to Dublin, which kind of feels significant. Can you talk a little bit about his legacy in Irish rugby? Because I do feel it's something that has probably got lost a little bit, just given the way the Rugby World Cup ended in 2019.
Yeah, I think Joe changed Irish rugby in a significant way. Obviously, just go back to the start of it. So Leinster had kind of broken through to a certain extent in 2009, didn't follow up on it in 2010, and then Joe came in from Claremont where he was assistant coach. So it was an amazing recruit, I think, by Guy Easterby and Leinster to see that potentially he had to be a head coach because obviously he'd worked under Vern Cotter. He came into a Leinster team and he added another layer of ambition in terms of how they wanted to play. Like, Czechia wanted to play, but we saw a level of detail and accuracy from Joe Schmidt teams in Leinster, which was another step forward. He doubled down on the cultural piece of it, and then obviously got a chance to coach in Ireland. And then I'll tell you how good he was. And this blows me away, is that he effectively kind of made it very hard for other provincial coaches to satisfy their players' demand for detail and knowledge, because he was so good, they were going back to their own provinces and feeling it was three steps down. And like, he actually ended up getting a few coaches sacked, not on purpose, but just because they couldn't live with him. And players who were in Irish camp were coming back and saying, look, this isn't how Joe sees it. This isn't how Joe trains. This isn't how Joe does videos. And like, that's very rare, Neil, and Johnny would notice, is where a coach is so far ahead of the game that everyone else really struggles to keep up, or certain coaches struggle to keep up. And hence some of the things he spoke about, some of his principles, some of the way he coached is still being used, you know? Like, the Irish breakdown wouldn't be a million miles away from the principles that Joe had. And some of our attacking plays would have been similar to what Leinster would have used before he went into Ireland. And he's probably, our memories of him are respected in some ways, can be damaged by the way it ended, and the type of rugby Ireland played, kind of to get success first of all, but then as he went into that Japan World Cup. But I think Joe, what he's very good at is actually looking at what he has, looking at the laws, looking at the trends, and then building a game plan or game model. So we saw with Leinster, he wanted to play because he felt he had the skill set, and the Champions Cup and the Pro 14 at the time, you know, it wasn't test match level, so you could play. And then he got a test match level with Ireland, and it was more of a closed kind of game plan, but it was geared to winning, and we did win a lot. And then obviously went over the top, and then obviously, you know, the review of the World Cup in Japan, there was certain players who felt the camp was nearly overbearing in terms of the level of detail, and that probably, I suppose, damaged his reputation to a certain extent. But I think if you speak to even the players who felt that camp was maybe too tough or too intense, they also, I've never heard anyone say he doesn't know the game better than most people. They're nearly better than anybody, in fairness. And even the All Blacks, the players who maybe looked down on him a little bit and didn't rate his achievements because he hadn't been a big name player, he hadn't been a big name coach in New Zealand before he went to France. I think when they got exposed to him in that year before the World Cup and during the World Cup, they realized how gifted he is, and the Aussies are realizing it as well now. And he was probably the only man who could have saved Australian rugby short term, and I think he will. I think the you know, no matter what happens on Saturday, British Lions tour, Australia will be no walkover.
Yeah.
Like he completely revolutionized the breakdown.
Yeah.
Like teams all over the world have copied him to this day. You know, like he brought in you know, what are called barrels, left and right, people hitting at the same time. You clear the left side, you clear the right side, knowing the detail around where you'd go first, second, third phase, and the ability to move, as Bert said, put the right people in those right spaces that they know exactly, and that clarity up to sometimes third, fourth, fifth plays. Like it was, he really, he like he's had a lasting, his legacy is going to continue on, obviously, but in terms of now, when people look back at the game currently, Joe Smith has written all over it for other teams all over the world, purely because of how he revolutionized the breakdown. Like he completely transformed that area of the game and was so far ahead when he, you know, when Leinster really started hitting their straps post-Christmas in his first year, that, you know, Leinster were nearly impossible to play against because people hadn't seen breakdown like this before.
And you'll be certain he'll have a plan for Ireland on Saturday as well. We are almost out of time, fellas. I do want to ask you though, the little bit of news provincially. Obviously, there's URC games coming up this weekend as well. But the big news at Munster, Bernard, over the last week or so. So on Friday, we had the announcement that Andy Kiriakou has departed with immediate effect as forwards coach, following on from Graham Rowntree's departure. Then on Monday, it was confirmed that Alex Codling, the Ireland women's forwards coach, is stepping in till the end of the season to work with Munster, kind of double jobbing as forwards coach across the two. And then yesterday morning and yesterday afternoon, we had Dennis Leamy and Mike Prendergast both signing up for 2 more years each, defence and attack coach. Most people have been talking, well, I say most people, most reports have been saying that Prendergast has been the most likely candidate to be head coach. In your opinion, would the fact that he has signed an extension as attack coach, does that necessarily rule him out of being the main man next season?
No, I don't think it does. I don't think it does. I'd imagine those discussions were have been had. I'd say they're going to wait and see how the next block goes. So obviously Lions this weekend, and then it, the first the December's a big month for all provinces. But I think he has a cracking chance of being head coach, head of rugby, some role like that. And obviously you could you then they then have Mossy Lawler, who's he's in the system there. I think he's a skills coach. I
Skills
could be wrong
coach,
on
yeah.
that. Yeah, skills coach. Yeah, so he could obviously step up then to take backs attack, take on more responsibility, and let Mike free him up obviously to the overall game plan. Look, I think it's if you're reading a book on how to PR your way out of crisis management, the sequence of events the last few days, take the box. So Andy Kirakos is departing for personal reasons. Codling is coming in Monday. Obviously seconded by the IRFU working with the women's team. And my understanding is he's only going in for 2 months. He's going in for 2 months to and then he goes back to the Women's Six Nations as it stands. But I think Sean Cronin is going to step up and take on some responsibility around the scrum and be an understudy to Codling. So obviously they would have continuity there. If Codling has to go back to the for the Women's Six Nations, so that's smart. And then obviously tie down, give stability in crisis, tie down to your main coaches, Leamy and Prendergast. And the title I don't think really matters. It's just the fact they're now going to be Munster coaches for the next 2 years, and how Munster reorganize or restructure, that'll play out in time. Someone's sending around photoshops of Stuart Lancaster being linked to come back to Munster, because obviously Stuart's in a bit of a tricky patch at the moment with Racing, but hopefully that passes and he gets to build what he wants to build there. But would Stuart Lancaster be the coach that Munster want, or I don't know what structure they want. I think when Razzie got the job, they said that they've done a review and it's a director rugby type is what they want. So and I think with Leamy and Prendergast tied in, maybe that's the role they will go for again, or maybe Costello will do that. I don't know how they're going to restructure, but I do think it's smart to basically lock down the two guys who've been there and are young coaches who from the province and have loads of ability and passion for their job. So that's well done by Munster.
Yes,
I
like
think
Johnny,
it's really important.
whatever happens, like it just puts a bit of stability on the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's really important, as Bert said, that they decide on what model they want and that they stick to that. So whatever recruitment process is going on behind closed doors, that if it's either a head coach or director of rugby or whatever it is, they need to have that. If it's going to be Prendy as head coach, they bring in Sumner Heath and then Cozzy as, sorry, Ian Costello as kind of director of rugby operations, if you want, for a different title, or whether it's a Rassie style DO or like if it's going to be, potentially like someone like Stewart, or is Felix that, or is Bert that DO, or given his, or it's someone they have to decide what that is and then do that and leave that play out. But that's really important. And I don't think, I think with everything that's gone on, have they settled on that model? So it's just important that, but it's great for the, to have that clarity for players, for everyone within the pathway, to have two excellent coaches signed up, who are innovative, would be up to date with absolutely everything, and that can really make a change. And I've already made a massive change to how they play and how they can play. So from a past player's perspective, it's brilliant to see that. They just need to decide on what it is and how that's going to work, and try and get that in place sooner rather than later.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
just on that, Johnny, I agree with you, but I don't think it's they should rush into it. So like I actually think this would be a good chance to be really look at all aspects of Munster rugby, the club game, how they're gonna develop players, etc. And then
That's
wants to decide wants to decide. Like I not do a Wales on it and take a year to do a review, but certainly, work out what model suits Munster best and then who are the people that can deliver that. And like I know the rugby operations role that Ian Costello took on, that was from the word from Munster was that was a really important role for Munster. So if Ian Costello becomes a DOR, well then you got to put someone really good into that. If that's the model you're going to go for. So I actually don't have any issue if it takes 3 or 4 months or if they don't hire that person or people till the summer as long as they're the right people,
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm saying. The pathway needs to be looked at. Like they had a very difficult year this year in terms of their underage stuff. They need to have a look at what is, do they go back to the essence of what Munster rugby is and build on the AIL and build through? And you saw that this year with a number of players coming through from a good Gary Owen side who have made debuts and played well. But they have to have an overall review and do it quickly to get something sorted, hopefully by the summer. But their pathway needs to be looked at and needs to be, really what decide what model is good. Is it schools? Is it not? And there's a lot at play there in terms of socioeconomic stuff. What, the investment that's gone into hurling that has affected, because people who are asked what club they were 10 years ago when I was there, they'd say Young Munster or Shannon. Now a lot of the kids from 16 to 20 are saying, "Oh, I'm Napiershiig," or like they're naming hurling clubs. So there's a lot at play there, and they've seen what that dynamic and what that shift has happened. It's trying to fit the model because there is massive opportunity and massive potential within Munster rugby, and it's to get the we all want to see. To see what is best and figure out their best model for them.
Well, for Munster, the season starts again on Saturday, hosting the Lions Saturday evening, 7:35 at Thomond Park. The other URC games earlier on Saturday evening, Connacht hosting the Bulls. That's a 5:30 kickoff live on RT2 and RT Player. And Ulster and Leinster on Friday night. That is live on RT Player. Kickoff at 7:35 on Friday evening. And of course, then as well on Saturday afternoon, 3:10, live commentary on RT Radio 1 of Ireland against Australia in the IRFU's 150th anniversary game. Fellas, it's been great having you on the podcast again this week. Thanks a million for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers.
Thank you.